Welcome to Coaching Uncaged by Animas, the podcast that explores the art, science, and career of coaching. And now, introducing your host and interviewer, Yannick Jacob.
Darren Pratt, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for making time.
Thank you, Yannick. And I'm delighted to be invited to speak about something that I'm so passionate about, transactional analysis. Looking forward to our dialogue together today.
Yeah, and that's actually, I read a line in one of your bios, which I loved, since you were saying passionate, and it said, Karen is most alive when facilitating learning in a coactive way. Mm-hmm. Her focus encompasses both the learning of skills, as well as the deepening of a sense of being within the skills.
Absolutely.
I just loved that it's not just about skills, right? There's a lot of educators, but really when it's co-creative learning, we need to pay attention to our way of being. So I'm going to be so curious to explore TA with you, because that's really your field, and how TA becomes alive. TA, in my experience, when I talk to coaches, when it's part of coaches' foundational training, a lot of them really find their home there, because it just shows up in people's relationships, and people's relationships are everywhere. Relationships are really everything we have, you could argue. And TA is such a beautiful model based on some, Freudian ideas, you could say. We can explore a little bit where it comes from, but really packaged in a way that is accessible to someone who's not dove into the deepest areas of psychology and, spend 10 years studying this stuff. It really opens up a lot, not just for coaches, but also for clients. So I'm very excited to explore that with you. You've done a lot in this field. You've been around for quite some time. You're a teaching and supervising transactional analyst. You're a PCC coach. You're supervising coaches. You also added appreciative inquiry to your skill set. You've worked with a number of people that I know and respect. And you wrote a book, Transactional Analysis Coaching. So that came out just a couple of years ago. And also you're the co-chair of the Professional Standards Committee of the International Transactional Analysis Association. So you come with a lot of knowledge. You teach regularly. You bring a lot to the field. So first of all, thank you for that. But also, I think it's important that people know where you're talking from. And I wonder if there's anything else that you would add to that picture.
I mean, the first thing that strikes me is the delight that you've picked up on how important relationship is in our work as coaches. And I would go even further to say the most important part is our relationship with ourselves as professionals. And I think that's where TA has been such a gift to me, starting way back in 2000 now I can understand who I am and how I tick, the meaning I've made of things. And I've realized this beautiful parallel journey between my ongoing awareness of who am I and how that shows up in what I do. And that's the most joyful part of me working with training coaches, training transactional analysts, is helping them to discover their relationship with themselves in a more honest way. And I think that serves them well when they're working with their clients as coaches.
Yeah, people who are listening to this can't see me smile, but as I hear you talking, I remember that TA really opened up a way for me to explore my relationship with my rebellious child. And you know, we always think that these relationships show up with other people, but we all have relationships with ourselves. There's different parts of ourselves, and they come up. And when we get to explore that, we get to know ourselves better. And when we get to know ourselves better, we show up better in our relationships, in our coaching relationships.
And I think sometimes when people have read maybe one book on TA and they go, oh, you do TA. Oh, it's that parent, adult, child stuff. And you go, yes, and so much more. Because I think that's almost just, if you like, the kind of what's in the window of the TA shop. It's what everyone knows. It's the most well-known model. But the background behind that Eric Byrne played with and co-created in those early days is huge. And at its essence, it's how do we make sense of who we are within ourselves, our intrapsychic world, And then how do we make sense of how we show up with others, the interpersonal world? And I think the balance of intrapsychic and interpersonal is so key. Some people have read a book or they've done just 2 days of TA training and they go, I know TA. And then they go out and TA the world.
Which they TA the world.
Very dangerous. They do TA to people and they go, oh, I know where you are. And they just talk about those states. They've got no wider sense. And I think that can be, well, unethical and psychologically almost dangerous. That's the ability to stay with who am I in the world.
Yeah, let me put a pin in this because this is definitely something I want to talk about. And but before that, I think let's take a few steps back. You talked about Eric Byrne, right? You wrote a wonderful book, Games People Play, and there's I sometimes found some of his stuff quite difficult to read when it's in the psychology literature. I think the book is quite accessible, but also it's been a while since it got published. So the language is obviously something that is less accessible now. But could you go a little bit into the foundations? What did Eric Byrne pick up on? Where did that come from? And how did it arrive at this parent-adult-child model that most of coaches that have heard about TA will be familiar with?
So Byrne is such an interesting character. He was a rebel in his time. He was a doctor. He was a psychiatrist. He was wanting to get a membership of a psychoanalytical body, and he was actually refused. And his big point was that the psychoanalysis of his day was very powerful towards the powerless. It was top heavy. People were in therapy for years. They were analyzed. They weren't invited in to claim their own power. He was a rebel in his time. His surname was Eric Bernstein. So he's a Jewish man, and it was not comfortable in those days in the US to be Jewish. That was the McCarthy era of all sorts of persecution. His passport was actually moved quite a few times. So he was
moved.
Removed.
Removed. Oh, wow.
Removed because he was considered politically on the edge. And I think psychologically he was on the edge. And he was almost, his rebellious child was where the energy for creating TA came from. He started gathering some colleagues around him and they would meet on Tuesday evenings. He called them the San Francisco seminars because he'd moved from Canada. Mm. He was born in Montreal. He moved to the US. And they started looking at good psychoanalytic psychology practices that were around and trying to reframe them into language that was more respectful of the clients and technology that people could use. And gosh, so many of his phrases is, you know, cure the patient quickly. Remember, he was a doctor, so he talks in medical terms. And the sense of giving people a framework so they can begin to understand their lives and take charge of their lives quickly was what he was all about. He said, you don't need to go the whole 9 yards of let's analyze who you are through your life. Get the patient functional again first. And then maybe the deeper reflection can come in. And so he started off the field of TA was started off as a psychotherapy field, but even one of his earlier books was called The Structure and Dynamics of Organizations and Groups. So he was already starting to look at it's not just individual psychology, what's going on in a group. Mm-hmm. So it was a short step for people to start developing his theory for work in organizational development. And that's another of the fields. And in learning, the educational field, which is where I sit, and it's learning in its diverse forms of schooling with children, but more importantly, adult learning, ongoing learning. And for me, coaching fits very much as learning. I think in the ICF definition of coaching, it speaks about learning very explicitly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the link. Mm-hmm. Go on. Yeah.
Yeah, so what Byrne wrote about in those early days in the 40s and 50s and 60s has been the kind of classical foundation of TA. And some people think it stopped there. But if you look at our transactional analysis journal that started in 1971 and it's still current, gosh, what people are doing with the foundational models and expanding and adding them on, adding on to them to bring the context that we're living in alive. So, so many fascinating pieces of new academic writing that emerge. There are four volumes of the journal every year.
Yeah, keeps growing. Keeps being added to, way beyond that foundational model.
Exactly. And I think people do themselves a disservice if they try and consider TA in its very essential form, because it was a white American in the 50s. Hey, and the world is such an international, diverse place now. So there's so many people from India, from Japan, from Latin America writing about TA in their context, which is very, very exciting.
Yeah. So tell us about games a little bit, because that was initially what he wrote about, and they show up with normal people just in everyday life. They show up in organizations, they show up in supervision, they show up in coaching. Tell us a little bit about games and that how it morphed into that model that people might be familiar with.
Sure. And I think if we link it to coaching as well, that is often a common thing when people come for coaching, for them to become aware of, I'm doing something here that's not helpful. TA talks about it as a game. And to take a step back, it's linked very much to the theory of script. So the thinking that human beings, as from the time we're born, or even some theorists will say before we were born, we've started making meaning of who we are, who others are, what the world is like. And the thinking is in TA, by the time we're 5 or 6, we've pretty much written the story of our life. Byrne spoke
That's
about
early.
Being in chapters of like a play, and we will even have the, oh gosh, this is going to be the last act of my life. This is how I will die. So originally it felt quite deterministic that those early experiences were really, really foundational. Other authors have said through their working over many years, we can recreate and change our script all the time for the whole of our life. And I think that's at the heart of it for me. That's what coaching is. It's people who are coming to understand themselves more, to be more effective in their context. But what supports it is who they think they are, their script, their meaning making.
And so understand it and then be able to reauthor it.
Exactly. Reauthoring or, narrative coaching talks about, picking up a different part of the story. And I think I often use the analogy of almost our operating system on our gadgets. We need to update them. And sometimes we 20, 30, 40, 50, and we're still using the operating system we used. We were, a 12-year-old at school and made to feel ashamed about what we could or couldn't do, et cetera. And it's often just noticing. And I think that's where the games come in. We play. Games are a way of manipulating another human being to get the connection and the appreciation that we're looking for.
But can I just move in there? Because I think the word manipulation it does something to me. It probably does something to other people.
Yeah.
But I think he meant it differently, or you mean it differently than what we might think.
So if I was, I'm in a relationship with somebody, a professional relationship, in a team, I need to know how I'm doing. I need to get feedback. But that person who's my superior is not giving me feedback. Instead of asking openly, I will angle for it and in that way manipulate. And that's what Byrne meant by games are manipulative. Instead of asking for what we need openly, we We
draw
get
it out in some
play
way.
Play the roles of, and the drama triangle is Karpman's model. He was one of Byrne's early colleagues, saying we get into manipulatively going, poor me, I can't do it. So that's the victim role. Or let me do it all for you. That's the rescuer role. Or the persecutor role, where we really get anxious, angry about somebody who's not doing what we want.
Yeah, and when you're playing the victim role, you're drawing out somebody saving you. And that can be conscious or unconscious. And that's why I think manipulation is often seen as this conscious, evil thing that people do to change somebody's behavior. Yeah. But a lot of that is unconscious, right?
So that's such a good point you're making, Yannick, because when we play games in the TA thinking, it's unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
I don't set out to, I'm going to make you really feel sorry for me by doing that. It's almost an inevitability that I just go into the poor me victim stuff, because this is what we practiced when we were little kids.
Yeah, growing up, it's been installed.
How do I feel safe here? How do I get my needs met? Is it better in my family to be the one that needs a lot of help? So, oh, it works if I play the victim. Or do I get what I need if I'm the helpful one with mom and dad? And then we learn to play the rescuer. So we play a game to try and feel okay. I'm okay, you're okay is a very foundational piece of TA. And when we growing up, we get lots of messages that support our sense of okayness, but inadvertently, or sometimes intentionally, depending on our circumstances, we get messages that make us feel not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then we play out or we act out these roles in a game, because it gives us conditional okayness. Or if someone says, oh, thank you for all the help you've given me, I go, oh, aren't I a lovely person? Mm-hmm. So it gives us conditional okayness. But ultimately, we're not using the fullness of who we are or inviting the fullness of the other person. And it's going to go wrong. A game starts with a rescue and victim, and it can last for half an hour or 5 years, and then suddenly one person shifts roles and goes into persecutor, and the wheels come off.
Yeah, and this is where the I'm okay, you're okay, I'm not okay, you're not okay, there's the 2x2 matrix, right? That I think was quite helpful just to see how people relate to other people.
Yeah, and that's the more foundational container for script, our sense of okayness or not okayness. Later models are bringing in almost four-dimensional okayness. You know, it's never just an I'm okay, you're okay. There's always a we're okay, they're okay, which is so important today when groups are othering each other. You know, we gang up and say, well, of course, we're right and you're wrong. You know, we're okay, they're okay. Gosh, we're just seeing that in so many things in the world today.
Yeah. Yeah, I really want to underline this this idea of games as not something that is manipulative in the sense that people might think, but that these are scripts that are installed from early childhood because we've learned them, or we've been told that this is how the world works. And maybe the world did work like that back then, or maybe your primary caregivers or your society or your school or significant people that influenced you thought that that's how the world worked back then. And they may or may no longer be useful now.
Yeah. And that's such a key point you're making, Yannick. It's our caregivers or systems or schools were almost doing the best they knew how to. You know, they didn't deliberately try and mess us up, as it were. They were doing the best. If you analyze what goes on in people's scripts, the kind of less helpful parts are probably coming from the child ego state of the big people around us to the little person. So it's coming out of their unmet needs, their hurts in their generation that kind of gets passed along. And there's a beautiful piece of TA thinking from one of our colleagues in Mexico, Gloria Noriega, who she's a therapist and she works with kind of transgenerational scripts and constellation work. And family constellations and TA make a beautiful link that there is a thread going through the generations.
Yeah, and once we
get it. But I think that's the point. We don't have to take it as we got it. We can reevaluate as we expand in our experiences. And that's where coaching comes in. People want to change. They want to think differently and realize the dynamics they play, the games they play, and then realize, oh, now I realize what I'm doing. I can then consciously change it.
Yeah, because that's really the crux of change, right? Once we become aware of how we're operating and why we're operating like that, and really owning that and allowing ourselves to own that. I think a lot of people struggle with that, that, you know, maybe they have blamed themselves for the things that they've done that weren't productive, or they were causing conflict, or their relationships didn't quite work out. And it's not your fault that you've learned this when you were young. Yeah. You know, so, but it can be uncomfortable to look at that.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes me curious about in coaching, there is an extent by definition, right? To look at the past, to look at how I grew up, to look at ages birth to six and the scripts that have been installed. So, you know, that feels quite therapeutic. How do you navigate the lines?
So what a lovely question, Yannick. I think if any of my TA colleagues get to listen to this, they're going to go, yes, Karen, I'm with you. But many of us are saying as coaches in the TA practitioners who are coaches, coaching is therapeutic, but it is not therapy. And the difference is that we would in a coaching conversation, I wouldn't say to somebody, now let's go back to when you were six. I wonder what messages you were getting then. But if something emerged working with a manager around, well, of course, I've got to be strict, otherwise people won't fulfill what they need to do. And I would sense, gosh, is this really still useful? It would be to explore what is that belief around authority? And at times it might be, whose voice might you be obeying metaphorically in your head? And is that voice still valid? And sometimes people will say, that was a story I heard from my teacher. And it's quite a relief for them to go, it's not valid for now. But I think the key thing is coaching. If we look at ego states, the basic model of TA, the adult ego state, the piece about the adult is it's the only way of being that's absolutely in the moment. TA uses the phrase here and now. So we're sitting, we're having this conversation together right now, and I can feel myself fully engaged. I'm seeing your responses as being fully engaged. Whereas parent and child is historic. It's in the past.
Ah, that's so interesting, because the way that I'd made sense of it is that when somebody's child gets triggered or somebody's critical parent gets triggered, and maybe we can draw out a little bit of the foundation for people who are not familiar with the model in a moment. But when that gets triggered, for me, it always comes up in here and now. And for me, that is what makes it coaching, right? If I feel quite rebellious when I maybe usually not, or when that's not helpful, that past ego state that is performed back then is showing up right now, right here in my relationship. So we can explore that. That doesn't mean we're exploring the past, but in order to understand what's happening right now, the past helps us to understand it, but we're remaining here.
And absolutely, you've absolutely got it, Yannick. It's the experiences are from the past, they show up now. And if we explore it now, that's still coaching. We don't go back to, well, your child is getting triggered now. Tell me about the history of that, because that takes it into therapy. And the adult, the more recent way of talking about the adult talks about the integrating adult. So in the here and now, we are integrating. We're almost reviewing millisecond by millisecond material in our parent ego state, our child ego state, bringing it into the here and now and going, with awareness, we can filter, okay, what is useful? Let me integrate it into the here and now, and what is actually not helpful anymore? Mm-hmm. So the metaphor of the integrating adult is not just that what early TA people said, oh, the adult is factual and computer-like, and some people erroneously say there are no feelings in the adult, but never said that, but people sometimes think the adult is just the factual one. The integrating adult is the bringing in my thoughts, my feelings, my experiences of being in a parent mode, my child experiences, but using it in the moment, in the here and now. I've got a framework that I've created called the OK communication model, which has drawn a box around the positive modes of the parent and the child. And I use a metaphor of we dance in the box with adult awareness now. In milliseconds, I'm thinking, what is useful from my nurturing parent, my structuring parent, my fun, creative child, my cooperative child that I can bring to the moment.
Mm-hmm.
In coaching, it's people just getting more and more in touch with the richness of who they are, but not being triggered to bring in something from the past that's unhelpful, that judges themselves, judges the other person, because that's the invitation to get into a game. And then it inevitably goes wrong.
Mm-hmm. Would you maybe give us some examples from your own experience, your own coaching or your supervision, how these ego states show up? Just so if somebody's new to TA, they can imagine how they are applicable in the day-to-day work of a coach.
Sure. As part of my work, I also give feedback to people on their coaching and their supervision. And a common theme that I've been listening to over the last few weeks is when people, either as a coach or a supervisor, there's an engagement, let's keep it as coaching, what the client wants to do, they listen, they distill what the essence is. There's the listening, the questioning, the evoking awareness. And maybe the client is hitting a place where this is kind of quite interesting, challenging work. And suddenly the coach goes into panic mode and thinks, oh, they're not getting what they want out of it. You know, there isn't an easy, oh, now I understand. And then the classic thing that they will do to get into a game is to get into rescuing. They start giving advice. They stop challenging because they don't want to be too nasty, you know, because coaches should be nice and kind and supportive. And yes, we need to have that support. And what does that do? That, and this is done almost unconsciously, this invites the coachee, the client, to go into victim. So they start doubting their autonomy, their ability, and it probably is inadvertently keeping the coachee even more stuck in potentially what they wanted to work with stepping into their confidence. So that is one thing when one is knows about TA, you can firstly monitor yourself and go, hang on, what's going on here? I notice I'm being pulled into rescuer. Mm-hmm. So there's a self piece. And then mm-hmm. usefulness in coaching is when I'm aware of, why am I working so hard all of a sudden? Huh. My TA mind says, what is that telling me about my client that could be useful for them?
Mm-hmm.
I'm invited into rescuer and doing all the work for them. So in terms of ego states, I'm going into that marshmallowing, over-nurturing parent. I'm all wishy-washy and kind and stopping the challenge. When I notice that in me as a coach, I go, that could mean my client's in a victim. They've suddenly stopped believing in themselves. And what good data that is for the coaching relationship at that point.
Yeah, what a beautiful illustration of how you can use yourself in the coaching relationship by paying attention to yourself rather than paying attention to the coachee. I mean, yeah. Of course, you're going to pay attention to your client, but when you notice, oh, I'm reacting in a way that maybe I don't usually do, what does it say about me? But what does it say about the other person? Yeah. Because this came out in our relationship. My child had been triggered. My critical parent had been triggered. You know, there's something to learn here for you.
Yeah. And then it's, what do we do with that? Because it can really help us focus in service of what the client says they want, either to consciously stop working so hard and go back to challenging the client. Or if it's a client who's quite skilled, we've done quite a bit of work, we've got a good solid relationship, to actually bring into name, let's just pause here. I'm noticing in our work today, I'm feeling an urge to do it all for you, and I'm wondering what's going on for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually can invite the client to really dip into that deeper sense of who am I in the topic I've brought? Is this, or is it just triggered by this particular context of a topic, or is it something I realize I do quite often? And that's where the transformational coaching piece can happen. In our training, we always say, you know, people coming with a topic, coach the person, not the topic. So it's dropping down into who am I? And that's for me where TA is such a gift. And I do want to say, I do realize that there are so many psychological modalities out there. And I don't want to be grandiose to say TA is the best or the only one, but it is a one that has really impacted me over many years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember the moment when TA really sunk in for me. I was in an event and I was there having a pretty adult-to-adult conversation with, I think, two other people in a group. And then a fourth one came in and I was considerably younger than everybody else there. And that person started to be really patronizing just in the way that they spoke to me. And I changed. Like, my rebellious child got totally triggered and I was just doing things that I were not appropriate. And I was like, oh, and then this person left and I was just like, wow, what just happened? It was a really interesting reflection just between the three of us who we just witnessed this encounter.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, oh yes, I got sucked into that game and I totally played my role, and it wasn't a coaching situation. So, you know, but I think that's where the power lies.
Yeah. I think it's awareness is the biggest gift of TA. And then we've got options. We can choose how we respond. Whereas without awareness, it shuts down options. And then we tend to just react.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's on automatic pilot. And it goes back to those earlier ways we learned when we were growing up of how to stay safe and get our needs met.
Yeah, and then it comes back to that beautiful Jung quote that goes, until we make the unconscious conscious, what things will happen, we will call it fate or something like that.
Yeah.
We'll just continue our scripts.
Exactly. And, you know, I think it isn't that we've got to dig for a script but it's when people come for coaching, they're wanting change. One of the learning theorists that I really enjoy is Mesereau, who speaks about a disorienting dilemma. Mm-hmm. And it's only when people are shaken up that transformational learning can happen. And I think as coaches, sometimes our role is to shake them up if that's what they've asked that they want to do. But often what they're asking for is what they think they want. And it's quite a superficial, how do they show up in the world? And often it starts there. And they don't know the deeper questions to ask. And if we can reflect back what we're noticing through a psychological framework, for me, it's TA, it can be quite a disorienting dilemma. But wow, what the opportunity is then for people to really transform.
Yeah, disorienting dilemma. I love that you're quoting Chick Mazzaroff. This is great. I think disorienting dilemma is a heavy term, but I think when people come to coaching, there's almost always, unless maybe if you're in the beginning and it's free or somebody's been given coaching or the organization is paying for it, there's another sponsor, maybe it's not quite there. But usually people come to coaching because something has happened or they need to try and figure something out. And I think TA for me is, more often than not, possibly always, a lens that can offer insights and awareness around what's been going on there for me. Why was I like that? Well, why did this happen to me? Or what do I do now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other big framework in TA that plays into coaching is the framework called discounting. We unconsciously keep ourselves unaware of something about us, the other person, or the situation. And we do that to confirm our script, because we've believe we're a person who is like this and blah, 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 whatever we've created. So my ears are like fine-tuned to what might somebody be discounting. And it's in a lot of picking up what's going on in TA is listening to the language. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, people like me probably wouldn't be in line for that promotion. That's a huge discount. Is it true?
Mm. Yeah, that points to a script there, right?
Minimizing something, or it's blowing it out of proportion. I'll never be able to get out of the end of this challenge I'm in. You know, that's grandiosity. And it's invite people to like adult is what's really going on. Let's review it without this pushing, making something not important or blowing it out of proportion, making it grander than it is.
And what kind of questions do you ask, or what might you say when you hear a script at play that differentiates TA from, let's say, cognitive behavioral approaches that also kind of work with noticing beliefs or values, or, you know, not the equivalent of scripts, but like, you know, it's in a similar area, right?
No, absolutely. And that's such an interesting question, Yannick. My gut feel is that if we had to share notes, they might be the same questions. I mean, the questions would be, I'm hearing this. Is this still valid? Or what part of it is still useful for you? What part of it are you beginning to realize you might like to leave behind? I'm sure those sort of questions would be very similar. I'm thinking some of the NLP frameworks of thinking errors. It's just another way of talking about discounting. We think about something in a way that's not real, and we challenge. But that's so interesting that people with different psychological backgrounds in a coaching conversation might be asking the same questions, but it's guided by a thinking framework that's slightly different. And I think this is also really important. Using TA as a coach, maybe 80% of the time people wouldn't know that, because I don't talk in TA jargon. Mm-hmm. 20% of the time I would say, here's a framework. Can I share it with you? It could be really useful. And do that little sideways step. You know, really within 2 minutes, one could show a diagram like drama triangle and go, okay, now let's go back to your coaching topic. Where do you think you are? And go back into coaching. But it's more TA as a way of who I am, what I'm sensing, what I'm hearing to guide my questions than talking TA. I think that can put people off or becomes a bit jargony.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that you say that, because that's definitely on the list of questions that I had. To what extent psychoeducation plays a role? Because I know that, well, depending on your perspective on coaching, you don't really want to go into jargon or show up a model or, you know, give people a lecture on how the mind works. But then I also know that many coaches who have been using TA or any other model, clients often really love it, that they get presented with something that really helps them understand themselves and helps to understand their relationships. And I think TA, more than many other models in coaching or in psychology, succeeds to do that because it is so accessible. So what role does psychoeducation play then?
You know, I think it's a fine balance. I think absolutely I agree, and Byrne would agree with you, is give the client the power. And if they have a framework, they can make their own sense of it, not just in conversation with us. But I would never intrude into the process or have a set thing like saying, oh, we're now on session 3, I'm going to teach you the drama triangle. Because that I don't feel is co-creative or partnering enough with the client. What I do say before I start working with somebody, I own where my background is, that I work with TA frameworks, and we contract. For some people, they say, yes, I'd love to hear it explicitly if it's useful. And others might say, oh, I just get confused by frameworks. And then I know where I stand. And I would always do a little contract in the moment. Gosh, I'm hearing a dynamic here in the topic we've been working with. Can I share this diagram with you? And Byrne said right at the beginning, if you can't diagram it, it's not TA. He was very quirky. And I think that's the value of TA, because people see triangles, circles, ego states, squares of okay, and it helps them really ground it. So absolutely, to empower clients, it's a gift for them. Many people will say, I still have that diagram in my office when I to remind me of way of being with my team or whatever.
Yeah, reminds me of an infamous psychologist, Ali G, who said, give a man a mixtape and he'll dance all night long. Teach a man how to scratch and he'll be dancing for generations.
Yeah.
Sometimes when we're being offered a model, clients can really take that on. And I've seen many coaching clients who worked with TA coaches who've offered the model that now go out into their lives and they use it to make sense of their relationship. Like, oh, this is how it showed up and this is how it showed up. And it gave them a language to understand themselves better and help other people understand them better.
Yeah. And I think the point that I always hold in mind is a model's got to be useful for the person, and to not say you must use the model like this. You know, one of my TA colleagues in America, he said, TA can be right or it can be useful. I prefer my TA to be useful. So I know I also hold an ethical awareness around being a TSTA in the TA world, being on the professional standards committee, that some people have read maybe only I'm okay, you're okay, games people play, and then they ride off to save the world and talk about TA in a way that is quite limited. Mm-hmm. And they're so enthusiastic that they want to use it with others before they've done their own work. And that can become quite manipulative in the wrong way, not in the game way that we've already unpacked, but kind of forcing people or labeling people or boxing people by saying, oh, you always do critical parent. That can be quite damaging to people. And I don't think that's an ethical way to work.
Yeah.
I'm holding that tension between yes, sharing, and make sure you've lived it at least a little bit for yourself.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you're talking about it, because I think that's where TA and also other psychological models sometimes get a bad reputation, when people use them as the only lens and with best intentions, right? You get really excited about something and it made click and the whole world makes sense based on this one approach to one lens of looking at people and their relationships. And then they go out and they analyze everything based on that model. And so just acknowledging the limitations of that, it's really good to see that it's an ever-expanding field. And that right off the bat, you said, look, this is not just the drama triangle. It's not just ego states. It's not just I'm okay, you're okay. But there's actually a world that surrounds it. And that it's a complex field, because human beings are complex beings. And the mind is a complex, the psyche is complex, right? Absolutely. So.
Yeah.
I've read that once as a criticism, that the temptation is to see human beings just as this collection of games that people play and draw everything, synthesize everything back to a particular game.
Yeah.
No. What I'm hearing is it's a lot more than that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we think of ego states as parent, adult, child. Maybe not many people know that there's a cultural parent that Byrne wrote about and Paul Drago took up in India good few years ago. And many people are writing about now as well, in terms of diversity, inclusion, intersectionality, that a group has got a parent, an adult, a child. It's talked about as the etiquette, what people actually do, and the character. So collectively, what are our scripts? You know, what's when you go into an organization and they've got their mission statement on the wall, you know, equal opportunities for all, or an NGO I used to work with was all about self-care. And then the character is what the collective group are feeling deep down that they're not verbalizing, which is, I'm stressed, I'm not acknowledged. So TA gives beautiful lenses to work with systems as well. It's much more complex than just individuals with their ego states and the games they play. which
yeah, so there's
the richness to the work. I think particularly in coaches working within systems, team coaching now, TA adds such a lot in terms of the TO group imagos, the unconscious patterns in our mind of a group, and how our coaches can work with that.
Yeah, there's relationships within ourselves. There's relationships between us and other individuals. There's relationships between groups. There's relationships between group and culture. There's relationships between culture and, you know, the ecological system. I mean, if you apply a systemic lens to TA, which it seems there's not really a difference if you practice TA at a high level, it's really a wide-ranging field that can help across a huge range of coaching gigs.
Mm.
What are some other, maybe recent or not so recent, maybe important directions in TA that you've come across? Maybe since it's got founded, but also perhaps where it's going. So I know there's a couple of directions that opened up, but feel free to take this question where you would like.
Sure. I mean, one thing that is very present to me, I've got a lot of connections with colleagues and trainees in India. And there's some really important writings coming out of India now, looking at the local Indian philosophy and how it relates to TA. Though that's some of the recent writings in the journal. People often talk about spirituality and they say, oh, Byrne never said anything about that. And he didn't explicitly name that. But there has been a thread through the years of spirituality linking to TA. So the Indian philosophy and spirituality is part of it. There are articles coming out more and more now about that. There, if I go back to the UK, a TA author, Martin Wales, speaks about, he draws ego states, circle for the parent, nothing in the middle, and a circle for the child. And he said, there isn't an adult ego state, there's just awareness. So he's quite linked to the Buddhist tradition, as I understand it, and how that's integrated into what difference does that make? Particularly, I'm thinking of me as a practitioner. You know, what is the work I'm doing to deepen my awareness that even my adult ego state isn't contained? It's just purely sort of energy in the moment. And the visual is that gap, not even a circle or not even a dotted line. So those are some of the things that certainly have interested me. And maybe to add a third one, a young trainer and supervisor in Guatemala has written a lot about intercultural competence, working across cultures. TA talks about a frame of reference, the meaning we've made, and it's got different layers. And he's really saying it's much more complex than just me and my little sense of who I am. The whole intersectionality around what are my lived experiences between my race, my gender, my sexuality, my age, and how at some, he brings his own experience in, he's the more powerful in some of those aspects and he's the less powerful in other of the aspects. Another colleague in India has written about that as well. How can TA make sense of that? So it's a whole expansive body of, these are peer-reviewed journals. So you submit your work, it's peer-reviewed without people knowing who you are and considered worthy to be in the Transactional Analysis Journal.
Really, what's the journal called?
TAJ, Transactional Analysis Journal.
Mm-hmm.
It's free when you are a member of the International TA Association. It's one of the perks of membership, ITAA. What a resource. The fields, you know, therapy, counseling, organizational work, educational work.
Yeah.
And really relevant, you know, it's no longer a white American male thing. And I think we honor where it began with Byrne and his colleagues, early videos of Byrne working. And they, in this room, you can't see a lot because they're all smoking. They're all. And there was one woman there who was, they were really like stretching the boundaries. But I mean, this was the the 50s and the 60s and the 50s and 60s, yeah, in California.
And a lot of experimentation happened during that time.
It spread to be so inclusive around all the cultures. I mean, books are translated into languages. My coaching book has already been translated into Japanese. It's almost ready to come out in French. And there are different cultural ways of being and how TA speaks to that. That's where the journal articles are really expanding to bring in now. And, you know, we often wonder as TA people, what would Byrne say if he came back, Eric Byrne, and he was looking at the index of the latest journal? Would he go, wow, what have they done with my model? And we would say, wow, isn't this amazing? Look how it's expanded to be grounded in the reality of 2024.
I really hope he'd be proud of what it's transcended into and what it's sparked.
Indeed, I'm sure he would, because he was a rebel, and we're pushing boundaries, I think, to answer the questions of our times through the psychological model of TA.
Yeah, wow, that's fantastic. I wonder if there's something you tell coaches that come in touch with TA. Are there some lessons you commonly share, or is there something that you would not want our audience to leave this podcast without?
You know, I think the essence of what I do when I train coaches and with my TA trainees is to really keep reminding them it's not what you do with TA, it's how you be. I was in India a few months ago because I wasn't able to travel to India during COVID, and I usually travel quite often. And I met up with some of my trainees, and the whole theme of the 2 days was doing educational TA, being a TA educator. And it's just go back to the foundational, who are you? How are you in your being continuing to go deeper, go higher, expand, whatever the metaphor is. And that's out of that will come how you use TA with your clients. If you shortcut that, it won't work out as profoundly as it potentially can. And it comes in beautifully with, I'm aware of the ICF competencies. I know there are many coaching frameworks, but that developing a coaching mindset. It's the mindset piece that is really key. And I think TA is such a gift.
I love, love, love that you bring this full circle to the very first thing that we started out with, because it's not just a skill set, even though it is a skill set, it's how you are being within the skill set. It's an opportunity to explore yourself. And that allows you to be in relationship. And in that relationship, you can do all this formidable work. But if you leave yourself out of the equation and just treat it as a skill set, it's far from the potential that it can reach. So, Karen.
I couldn't have said it better, Yannick. Absolutely that.
Well, you've sparked that. So thank you so much for it. Anything you'd add? Particularly, maybe where can people step more into your sphere? Where can people learn more from you?
Yeah. So there is a book that you mentioned at the beginning, Transactional Analysis Coaching. I was approached by Routledge in 2019 or so. It came out in 2021. That really is a succinct sense of TA. And I think for anyone who's serious about TA and wants to own it professionally and ethically, the entry point is to do a TA 101. It's a minimum of a 12-hour course. It's been endorsed and created by the international TA bodies. So wherever you do it, your certificate will be valid. And then dive into the next step would be with what most people call a foundation year. So all the 12 or 15 TA topics, and we've only touched on a few, that you'd meet briefly in 12 hours, you would then spread it out, a closed group working for a day, one full day a year, 12 days to really go deeper into the foundation year. The course that I offer the foundation year, I've actually aligned it to ICF CCEs. So you get a really good number of continuing coach education units in a very worthwhile deep dive into TA. And then you poise to, do I want to qualify in TA? And then there are advanced TA training groups that you would join. And also to flag up, a gift in the TA world is the significance of supervision, that time to reflect on our work. So for the first level of training, for example, we have to have 150 hours of supervision. So it's not just now and then if you feel like it. So TA 101, take it further for a foundation year. Get yourself a TA supervisor, even as a coach, even if you're not doing the full TA journey. Mm-hmm.
Karen, thank you so much. It's been such a joy to talk to you. I loved how this bounced back and forth, and appreciate your work, appreciate what you're putting out there, and how lovely you've laid this out and illustrated it. Really appreciate it. And I hope we get to see each other again soon.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Yannick. I've enjoyed this. I've kind of, when you started ending off, it was, have we spoken for an hour already? And I think what made it so engaging for me is how you took what I shared, and it felt like a real conversation bouncing between each other. So I'm delighted and honored to be part of your series of podcasts. Thank you very much.
Well, that's the power of dialogue, and coaching lives off of that. So I hope we could make this useful to people out there. And if you're listening to this or watching this, start a conversation, with us or with other people. This is meant to start conversations and continue conversations. And I think we can all grow as coaches and also grow coaching. So thanks once more, and see you.
Thanks. Bye.
To watch these episodes on video, make sure you also check out youtube.com/animascoaching. See you back here soon.